Inception of the White House Situation Room. In the early 1960s, the White House Situation Room began as a crucial hub for presidential decision-making. It all started with Godfrey McHugh, an Air Force Brigadier General and close advisor to President John F. Kennedy. McHugh, known for his connections, introduced Kennedy to the idea of a centralized command center. This center was essential for managing crises during the Cold War. The term Situation Room first appeared in a 1961 military study called Concept for National Cold War Operations. McHugh sent this study to Kennedy, proposing a dedicated room within the executive staff. This room was meant to handle the growing complexities of Cold War intelligence and operations. The recommendation came just in time. 10 days later, the Bay of Pigs invasion underscored the urgent need for better communication and decision-making processes. The birth of the Situation Room. In April 1961, the Bay of Pigs invasion, aimed at overthrowing Fidel Castro, turned into a disaster. Poor communication and disorganized leadership led to its failure. President Kennedy, frustrated by these shortcomings, took decisive action. He realized the urgent need for a central hub where critical, secure information could be managed effectively. Just 10 days after the invasion, Kennedy ordered the creation of what would become the Situation Room. Located in a converted basement bowling alley, Navy engineers swiftly transformed it into a functional four-room facility. Despite its basic setup, it featured crucial elements like secure communication lines and briefing areas. This move marked a pivotal step towards improving how the U.S. government handled crises. In its early stages, the Situation Room quickly became vital for handling crises. Its importance was evident during the Cuban Missile Crisis of October 1962. When U.S. intelligence spotted Soviet missile sites in Cuba, the Situation Room provided President Kennedy with urgent updates. It relayed Khrushchev's decision to withdraw the missiles, broadcasted by Radio Moscow, highlighting its critical role in decision-making. Initially staffed by CIA personnel, the Situation Room operated nonstop, with officers on 24-hour shifts. Over time, it expanded to include staff from other national security agencies. Its main purpose was to collect and share classified information, ensuring the president and his advisors stayed informed. By centralizing information securely and efficiently, it significantly improved decision-making during emergencies. This innovation, born out of Cold War needs, remains crucial in U.S. national security operations today. Johnson's late-night watch on Vietnam. In the early morning hours of May 20, 1965, while most of Washington, D.C. slept, the White House Situation Room was bustling with activity. Here, President Lyndon B. Johnson managed the Vietnam War with intense focus. He relied heavily on this room, often calling for updates day and night. His demands for detailed information were recorded on dictabelt machines. Johnson wanted to know everything, from casualty numbers to the status of planes returning from missions. For example, on March 30, 1965, at 8:10 a.m., he asked about casualties in Saigon, demonstrating his deep involvement in every aspect of the war. President Johnson's commitment to national security was intense and visible. His daily routine, as described by his national security advisor Walt Rostow, was divided into three parts: active mornings, social evenings, and late-night reading and calls. Johnson's daughter, Lucy Baines Johnson, revealed that he was driven by a fear of missing critical information that could save lives, often leading to sleepless nights filled with updates. In stark contrast to JFK, who seldom used the Situation Room, Johnson frequently spent significant time there. He even had his Oval Office chair moved for comfort, emphasizing its importance to his administration. Historian Mark Gupta Grovey likened Johnson's use of the Situation Room to FDR's reliance on the map room during World War II, highlighting its pivotal role during LBJ's presidency. The Situation Room and its role in history. The Situation Room advanced for its time, featured secure phones and fax machines. Though upgrades were limited by budget, crucial improvements were made, like adding a secure communications area. During the Six-Day War in 1967, President Johnson used the Moscow-Washington hotline to directly contact Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin. This was the hotline's first major use and helped calm tensions, avoiding a potential nuclear crisis. Johnson's reliance on the Situation Room highlighted its crucial role in how presidents make decisions. By frequently using this hub during times like the Vietnam War and the Six-Day War, Johnson showed how vital it is for leaders to have a central, secure place for getting real-time information. This innovation wasn't just important during international conflicts, but also proved essential during domestic crises. Leadership in crisis. Reagan's response to assassination attempt. At 2:27 p.m. on March 30, 1981, President Ronald Reagan was leaving the Washington Hilton Hotel when shots rang out. John W. Hinckley Jr. fired six times, hitting Reagan in the chest with a ricocheting bullet. Secret Service agent Jerry Parr swiftly pushed Reagan into his limousine, urgently shouting, "Get out of here! Go! Go! Go!" Initially appearing unharmed, Reagan soon collapsed upon entering George Washington University Hospital. This sudden turn sparked widespread confusion and panic. The White House, especially the Situation Room, became the center of crisis management. National Security Advisor Richard Allen made an unprecedented decision to record the Situation Room discussions, offering a direct look at how Reagan's top aides reacted and made decisions during this critical moment. Chaos in the Situation Room after the shooting. The recording started at 3:24 p.m., less than an hour after the shooting. In the Situation Room were important leaders like David Gergen, Don Regan, Fred Fielding, and Al Haig. Caspar Weinberger and others arrived soon after. Vice President Bush was absent, traveling from Dallas without a secure phone line to the White House. The atmosphere was chaotic, with frantic conversations as officials dealt with wrong information and debated who should talk to the public. James Brady, the press secretary, had been seriously hurt, adding to the confusion. Haig quickly took charge, famously stating, "I am in control here," though this wasn't entirely accurate under the Constitution. His words increased uncertainty and confusion. Concerns about who controlled the nuclear football, the briefcase with launch codes, intensified the crisis. General Haig's insistence on securing it showed how high the stakes were and the uncertainty about who was in charge. Tensions rose further when reports of more Soviet submarines near the East Coast reached the Situation Room, sparking fears of a bigger threat. Secretary Weinberger's decision to raise the alert level for the Strategic Air Command, despite Haig saying no such measures were needed, sparked a heated argument between them. The recording also caught moments of humanity amid the chaos. There was confusion when James Brady was wrongly reported dead, followed by a solemn moment of silence. Vice President Bush's arrival eventually brought some calm, as he focused on restoring normalcy and showing composed leadership. Recent events exposed serious communication and crisis management problems at the White House. The lessons from that day prompted significant upgrades to the Situation Room. These changes strengthened its ability to handle national emergencies, ensuring better readiness for future crises. Amidst 9/11's turmoil. On the morning of September 11, 2001, Ed Podinsk was starting his day like any other, taking his daughter to her first day of preschool. But everything changed when he got an urgent call. He rushed back to the White House Situation Room. There, he faced a sudden and unprecedented crisis, the unfolding disaster in New York City. Podinsk hurried to the White House upon hearing of the terrorist attacks. The Situation Room was becoming the central command center for the nation's response. Rob Hargis, another senior officer, had already organized efforts inside. He understood their crucial role in supporting President Bush. Despite calls for evacuation from NSC Executive Secretary Steve Biegun, Hargis and his team chose to stay. Their presence was vital for effectively communicating with the president. During the 9/11 attacks, Captain Deborah Lower, director of the Situation Room, was with President Bush in Sarasota, Florida. She quickly informed the president about the attacks and ensured secure communication was set up. As Air Force One swiftly ascended to evade potential threats, Lower managed vital links between the president and key advisors, like Vice President Cheney and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. Throughout the day, the Situation Room team handled various tasks. They answered calls from leaders worldwide and managed information flow. Hargis remembered the impact of the dead list, names of those who would have died if the White House had been attacked. Improve crisis communication. After 9/11, the Situation Room staff didn't just work their shifts, they went beyond duty hours. Pedinsk, who had recently left the Pentagon, tragically learned that many of his former colleagues had died in the attack. Despite personal losses, he and others stayed focused on their mission, driven by duty and resilience. However, the events of September 11th exposed serious flaws in the White House's communication systems. These flaws led to immediate and long-term upgrades. Problems included overloaded phone lines, inadequate secure channels, and delays in getting crucial information from intelligence and defense agencies. This confused and slowed down decision-making, as staff struggled with unverified reports and rapidly changing information. The improvements made afterward were vital for future crisis management, ensuring more reliable communication channels during emergencies. Crisis management evolution. In the days after the attacks, the Situation Room's nonstop efforts showed their commitment under pressure. They ensured constant support for the president, emphasizing the importance of being ready and resilient during national emergencies. This experience profoundly changed how the White House handles crises, establishing a new standard for future operations. Trump's unconventional White House peak. When Omarosa Manigault Newman was dismissed from her White House position on December 12, 2017, it was no ordinary firing. The event highlighted how differently the Trump administration handled things. Called to the Situation Room by Chief of Staff John Kelly, Omarosa was told she was being let go because of significant integrity issues. She secretly recorded the conversation using a hidden device, breaking rules about security, and revealing the chaos within the administration. John Kelly said Omarosa's exit would be friendly, but she saw it as a threat. She claims she was stuck in the Situation Room for 2 hours, not even allowed to get her inhaler. Jeff Fowler, who was in charge, denied her accusations, saying the room can only be locked from the inside. Omarosa's recording didn't just capture her firing, it also brought to light trust issues and security problems at the Trump White House. The Trump administration. During the Trump presidency, distrust was rampant. Many close to Trump, including the president himself, frequently recorded conversations, highlighting a deep-seated suspicion within the administration. The incident involving Omarosa vividly demonstrated this, revealing how even supposedly secure rooms were vulnerable to internal surveillance. The broader context of Trump's time in office was marked by frequent disorder. The administration saw rapid turnover, with 4 secretaries of defense, 4 directors of national intelligence, 4 White House chiefs of staff, and 5 secretaries of homeland security cycling through their roles. Prominent figures like Rex Tillerson and James Mattis openly criticized Trump's competence and character. Tom Bossert, a Homeland Security advisor, bluntly described Trump as the least disciplined person he had ever encountered. Despite efforts by top aides to maintain order, there was a persistent atmosphere of unpredictability throughout Trump's tenure. Erratic decision-making by Trump. In June 2019, President Trump called off a planned attack on Iran at the last minute, despite missiles being ready to launch. A lawyer's warning about potential casualties caused this sudden change of plans. This kind of impulsive decision-making was a hallmark of his presidency, often influenced heavily by whoever had spoken to him last. Insiders like Tom Bossert and John Bolton, who served under multiple presidents, pointed out serious concerns about Trump's behavior. Bolton, in particular, criticized Trump's lack of knowledge and refusal to learn, which stood in stark contrast to George W. Bush. Despite Bush initially lacking foreign policy expertise, he actively sought to understand and engage with complex issues. During Trump's presidency, the Situation Room became a symbol of the difficulties his administration faced. Trust was scarce, and established rules were often ignored. This created an environment where internal security and making clear decisions were seriously affected. Key points. 1. The Situation Room was created to improve crisis management during the Cold War. 2. A central hub for secure information helps leaders make better decisions. 3. Regular upgrades to technology are essential for effective communication in emergencies. 4. Clear roles and responsibilities are crucial for managing crises effectively. 5. High-pressure situations can expose weaknesses in communication systems. 6. Trust and clear decision-making are vital for effective leadership during crises. 7. Internal conflict and disorder can undermine a team's ability to respond to emergencies.